And we're back.
Woo!
Episode 4. De Cuesto Series Podcast. We're going to talk about some November hunts today. And November hunting strategies.
All right.
It's a terrible wind in here.
Yeah.
November, man. I guess we should start with saying that we'll introduce ourselves first, and then we'll get all the awkward stuff out of the way.
Take it, Kurt.
I'm Kurt Geyer from Working Class Bowhunter, and I just happen to be one of the hosts on this show. I'm the idiot of this show, unlike Steve that's an idiot on Working Class Bowhunter. So it's a dynamic. That's where I am.
Andre DeQuisto, Lone Wolf Custom Gear.
Cody DeQuisto, Lone Wolf Custom Gear, XOP. Here we go.
Podcast host.
Officially.
Yep.
So kicking that off, first thing we want to talk about is the ambush stand. It is finally done. It is finally available. This episode actually officially is the release of orders. So we have limited stock. We have 150 in stock ready to ship. So if you were a guy waiting on this stand and looking to purchase it, be sure to get to the website, www.lonewolfcustomgear.com, and get your order in. Saddle itself is in development, not available at the moment. First thing available is just the stand itself. So I don't know if you want to kind of go through some stuff on the stand, or we talk about that for just a second.
Yeah, if you notice, this saddle platform is a little bigger than what's out there. So you literally could run this with a regular safety harness. You can stand straight. You can turn around, face away from the tree. So it's a little more versatile, and it's still only 4.5 pounds and super compact.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, essentially designed in the image of the original Assassin, available through Lone Wolf back in 2006, you know, for about a year or so. But, that's the thing.
A lot of people don't know about that platform. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people do, but it's an overlooked thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, the Assassin was actually the first,
that's what I'm saying.
Mainstream.
Like, I think people...
Yeah, see, people think saddle hunting is like this new craze.
Like new this year.
No. So, actually, the first, I guess we could dive into that a little bit, but, you know, and we kind of have some talk about it on the website a little bit, but Dad, you actually hooked up with a guy named Brad Kuhnert years and years ago and kind of collaborated, and the Assassin was born. It was actually the first saddle stand that was available to market, like mainstream, and that was back in like 2006. Mm-hmm. It didn't take very well because not a lot of guys were kind of into that.
Yeah.
And now
it was ahead of its time for sure.
Right. Yeah. Now it's like the.
Oh, now, yeah. Now it's the thing. And some of those Assassins you can actually find on like eBay going for an absurd amount of money.
Oh, really?
They're just.
That's what kind of got us going back. Hey, we better bring these back.
Yeah. I mean, it was a quality product. Everything has now since kind of gotten smaller, and guys are hunting on the pegs and all this kind of stuff. But this one definitely got a little more ample platform room. Like Dad was talking, you can actually hunt out of it like a stand. So if you're a guy who's really wanting to minimize some weight too, not wanting to go the whole saddle deal and use your standard harness and you're just a stander, I mean,
that'd be perfect.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of guys that I've seen in comments and messages on the Working Class podcast when we talk about you guys' line of stands is guys, especially bigger guys, are commenting on how they like the size of this better because it makes them feel a little more secure up in there, and they're not always having to stand on the edge of a real small, you know, what would be like something like that size platform. Yeah. You know, they feel stable, and you can get a break from your hips or whatever, you know.
Well, some of them, if you're a sizable person or depending on the tree you're in, you physically cannot stand straight up. Like you have to be in that lean back.
You're kind of in that hammock style.
Yeah. Try and shoot a bow sometime with 1 foot up in the air, just on 1 foot, and that's kind of what it equates to. You got your feet are both firmly planted. You can balance. Mm-hmm. You can lean. You can stand straight without having to lean on a belt. So it's a lot more versatile. And I think you're going to find that The smaller ones are going to be a thing of the past. So.
Yeah, I think that'll change with time, especially because I'm big into the archery side of things, and I shoot a 35 axle-to-axle bow. And the big thing is when you're in a regular saddle, a lot of guys are concerned with your actual shooting form. You got that big rope that runs up in front of you to the tree, and sometimes guys that shoot a longer bow, because I just prefer them. They feel better to me. When I draw that back, my string pinch is so much wider that my string cuts down, so I have to really watch what's underneath my bottom limb or top limb or wherever. So something like this allows guys that like those bigger bows more versatility. Instead of getting a bow that's 28 axle to axle or 30 axle to axle, having to worry about that. Almost kind of like a ground blind bow when you have on some saddles. Not always, but it eliminates a lot of that concern for a lot of those guys.
Well, and that's the nice thing, too, about the actual saddle that's in development, too. It eliminates that
bridge
or rig or whatever you want to call it. It eliminates that harsh, huge angle up, and you're essentially tying in lower, so you can swing your bow over it. You can get that full draw.
We have a patented ring system that Brad has that allows us to bring that thing down and really get to be able to move right or left fluid, and you could take that bow and just go right up over the top like nothing. Real easy to do. So
awesome.
That's in development now. I know a lot of this stuff has taken some time, but we're kind of a perfectionist here, and we want to get this thing just right. And I think this stand now with like a couple of mini sticks attached to it, it really straps up to a package. You can throw this out of the back of your truck. The sticks don't fall off. It's streamlined on your back. I think we're going to include a set of backpack straps with all these going out now.
Yeah,
so it's a nice little package. You're cutting your weight in half basically from a rigger.
Yeah,
stand setup. So.
Definitely. Yeah, and plus just the portability in general.
Right.
Even if it was really heavy, just the portability of it is huge, we're going to do a special on these. We're going to do a code for the podcast for this episode. Were we not going to do that?
No.
We are now.
All
right.
Get
thanks,
it all away, man.
We're going to get into it. So another, without doing too much product talk here, but.
Free guided hunt by Cody.
Another thing.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
People could just hop on your 1.0 stand on the seat.
Yeah,
they could. Carry them in.
There you go.
Drop them off. Hang their stand for them.
We should talk about that. We should talk about that new stand too. Of the feedback we're getting now of guys who are literally in the woods using it. But let's stick to this for now. Go ahead.
Another product available that's we've kind of been talking a little bit about. Through like social media and we've had on the site, but it's finally in stock, ready for purchase, just in time for the rest of the season, So this is our dual chamber wind indicator. So what this does is this eliminates about three larger pieces of gear you would take in your pack, and it combines it into one. So this is got a port for your standard powder, wind indication, cornstarch, baking soda, just any sort of wind powder. So you put that in there. Well, what's awesome about this is it's got a compartment specifically designed for milkweed or solid sub, if you want to put cotton balls in there or whatever you want. But you got a wind milkweed compartment on the back end. So now you got both units in one. Also got your compass. Check your direction. Mm-hmm. Check your wind. Know what you're doing. It's a really nice compact unit and just an awesome wind.
Yeah, and it's ergonomic. It's low glare. A lot of those plastic bottles with the wrapper on them. This is a highly overlooked tool, and I think it's I think a lot of people can look at something like this and kind of like giggle and think like it's a gimmicky type thing. But people who bow hunt don't realize this is your best friend. Especially when you're going into
wind direction,
sensitive area. Yeah, well, I mean, it is, but a lot of people think, you got your app that tells you that, but it's different when you're in there,
So, I mean, just dialing back to that a little bit, the wind by far, I think we can all agree, or us, wind is the most important part of the hunt. And I think, I'm not versed in a bunch of different games or chasing different animals, but, I mean, you're talking all game pretty much. That's their main line of defense.
The other thing is that compass. Okay, that's important. I'll bet if you went in half the setups you have, you think you know how they're really set up, and you're really off a little bit from where you think. So,
yeah.
You're following that wind direction. You're keeping a monitor on it.
Well, how many times have you pulled up your app and it's not loading properly?
Mm-hmm.
Or you're in the hills, or you're in, you know, you're on a new piece of property, or
well, that too, and what we talked about the last podcast, Hunting October, and we talked a little bit about quartering winds and where the wind's good for you, but it's almost really good for the deer too. This can help you get that edge. You know how good you are. You know.
So the thing is, too, it's very easy. I think what you're trying to say, Dad, it's very easy to think you know the exact direction even by looking at your phone and looking at an aerial.
Right.
But until you're in that position, facing where you're facing, and you pull that actual compass out, I think this is a big piece that a lot of guys don't use anymore. And I remember I was hunting last year, and a buddy of mine started laughing at me because I pulled out a compass. And he's like, you still carry around a compass?
Mm-hmm.
And I got one of those.
What are you,
like,
a Boy Scout?
Yeah. And
I got three of them.
It's one of those.
In case I lose one.
It was one of those flip-top ones, and he's like, oh, you still carry around a compass? You know, and I'm like, well, yeah. Like, I just like to always see what the wind's doing. Or not even wind, but direction. If you're going to set up a stand, you got to know exactly which way so you can check then for the wind. So, and it. My phone has let me down a lot. It's let me down a lot looking at direction.
Oh, yeah.
So
leave the
phones,
take the wind check indicator with
you. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, this goes clipped on my bino harness, binos, rangefinder. So it's right there.
Yep. Yeah. So, and another thing, too, all the caps and attachment points.
Working hinges, all, you're not going to lose anything.
They're all connected. Everything is combined.
I bought a $44 wind check bottle, and I lost the cap on the first. Wasn't even connected the first time out.
Another great thing about this bottle, we do not sell vapor cartridges, but the top is designed, the top nipple there that if you were more of a vapor guy and you didn't like the powder and you still wanted to use milkweed, you can actually slide a standard size vapor cartridge in the top, and the cap fits right over it. Yeah, so
cut off the top and you're...
Yep. So, I mean, it's
I saw a lot of comments, because when we just made the post about these, guys were like, where do you charge it if you have the... Well, the thing, it just runs off like forced air. So when you squeeze it runs through that vapor cartridge.
Yeah, there's no charge.
So, there's
no batteries.
Yep, no rechargeable. That would just be a... You know, the vapor cartridges that you buy that have, like, whatever, how many, what do they say, like 100 puffs or something, or they go by.
Like,
and there's a lot of guys out there now refilling their own vapor cartridges, and we'll get into that on videos and stuff later. But anyway,
coming out,
this product is available in a special that we're running. So right off the bat was, you know, any purchase of the Assassin Stand, you get a free wind bottle. That will be, what was the code we had for that? So...
I think we're going to make it up on the fly, it sounds like.
Yes, we are.
We'll do it November.
Yeah.
Yes, November. So listen to this podcast. You want to get yourself a, one of the ambush stands, code November, all caps, and you'll get yourself a free wind bottle.
Cool.
Cool.
Well, it is November.
Oh.
And we did the October hunting podcast. This is we're recording this on November 1st, and we should be hunting. Sorry. Media obligations. Cody, you mentioned you hate November. Maybe hate's the strong word.
So I have a very love-hate relationship with the month of November, because it's an awesome time. I love everything about November. I love the things you see out in the woods. I love the way the deer act. I mean, it's cool. I mean, it is awesome to witness the behavior of a whitetail in November. Like, that is... Hands down, there's no question about that. I mean, if you get any sort of rut activity, or if you're out there at the right times, I mean, you got colder temperatures and just enjoying being out there. But, I mean, I've seen some cool stuff, man. I've seen some crazy fights. I've seen, you know, crazy chases. And
it's probably the most popular time hunters want to take to the...
Yeah, the
if you're looking
class,
for capitalizing,
but, yeah, deer. Yeah, it's a working class person's time to take their vacation
and get your shots.
And it's awesome, but on the flip side... It's fucking chaos, and that is what I don't like about it, because I'm a very systematic person, and I like
running targets.
I mean, I don't know.
You like October way more than November. Is that fair to say on that breakdown?
I like early and late better than the middle. Yes, I just
okay. So, what about you, Andre? I mean,
not this year.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
So this October is probably one of the best Octobers I have for class of deer and being on top of them, and have not been able to close the deal. So There's kind of a love-hate relationship this year. I got we'll have some video clips. You can see some of the bucks working scrapes where they're up on their feet. We had a lot of competing deer of the same age class. So you'll have a couple of deer that are in the 180s just checking each other, working a scrape. Then you see the other one come in and work over that one, and they're just like, they're fighting over it. So it was a insane. Great time of year, but
yeah,
boy, up close and personal. Got almost, you know, almost closed the deal a few times, but nothing yet. So November, I'm gonna love because something's going down.
Yeah, yeah. So. Well, this is a time like I like October a lot, especially getting into the later weeks of October. I do enjoy November because of why Cody dislikes it a little bit. I like the chaos because it gives that mystique of when you go to the woods, you never know what's going to happen. That, like a buck that's 180 inches that has lived his whole life two farms over could be running a hot doe and come 20 yards right underneath you, and you didn't know anything about that deer. And that's a cool thing.
That's another fact. Yeah, so, you don't know. It's the unknown.
Let's talk about some techniques in November. What you should be doing.
Let's dig in and let's start. What I want to do from a listener perspective, I want to start as basic. And almost to you guys, almost I want to break down to something that you guys probably just overlook because it's so just common knowledge for you guys and your experience and how long you've been after it. But if you can just wire down your brain to the nitty gritty of if someone took vacation the first week of November or the second week of November, what would you advise them to start doing, start looking for? Like that's their time to hunt. They haven't had any time off before this. What would you or what would you tell them to do at first or look for to get going to optimize their success percentages?
So I would say you're not hunting a buck anymore. Now you're hunting the does.
Okay.
So you want to be in the area with the most volume of does. Stay with them. Stay on them because them bucks are all going to be nosing around there.
Yeah.
So all that sign you're seeing is great. Bucks are leaving it behind daily, but they're hitting that and they're gone and they're not coming back. So if you're hunting that sign still, you're going to be kind of a day late, you know, dollar short behind the scenes. So,
yep, makes sense.
Start going after the, you know, food plots. Where there's a big concentration of does.
And you're going in, are you doing food sources in the mornings too? Guys that have a food plot, they're going in the morning in the dark?
Anywhere the, well, you can get off of them, but anywhere the concentration of does are at, all of those bucks will be
checking them and bouncing back and forth. Okay, so find the does. And then here's where I think some people get hung up or want, and to break down, and we cover a lot of it in our conversation, is entry and exit when it comes to stuff like that, because you don't want to go in and bust deer out of there, all the does out of there, and then the bucks are following the does over there. So I know wind direction, obviously, on entry and exit's a big deal, but I guess so find the does. If the food source is where it's at, is there any tips on how to really optimize your entry success of not being detected going in?
Okay, before we go into that, though, we were talking about food source. The does aren't always in a food source.
Yep.
There's a period now where these does are going to be hiding. They're getting harassed so much.
Okay, it's a good
point. They're not ready to be bred. And on our property, we have a no food source, just a thick kind of area that everything gets pushed into.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a gold mine. And then bucks all know it, and they all just they come picking around that spot. So,
gotcha. Well,
this is where corn can be horrible, too, because
if
there's a lot of corn, a lot of standing crop where you're
a
hunting
lot this
in
November, year.
And there
everywhere
is.
About in the
I mean, we're surrounded by it, and there is a lot of stuff happening in that corn that you don't know about, and they're stuck in there. Those love to hide in there.
Those aren't concentrated anymore. Now everything's spread out, so now it's you don't have a bigger spot to hit. So
that's a good point that the does are feeling pressure from the bucks, so they're not going to necessarily be out in the open as much as, you know, chance of maybe being spotted from across the field by a buck and getting harassed. So would that be normally their hiding spots? Would it be bedding areas, thick timber cover?
All of the above, but I would like to know exactly where those does go. I still don't know. For a while, they just disappear off the face of the earth.
Really?
And I think they just aren't moving much. They find a spot.
Just hunker down and
they're hanging tight, just like a moon phase where a buck would sit in a bedding area for 3 days without moving. Them does do the same thing. But when they're ready and they want to be bred, they come on out and play, and then it's then it's your happy time.
So I know once you said that, there's a lot of people that ask the question is like, well, if that happens, what do I do? If the does are hunkered down, what do I do? And sometimes you can't do anything. I don't know. But I know that's going to be a message. Like, what do you do if that's your situation?
I think it's a toss-up between, like you said, if you can't find that doe, I mean, you can go looking for those deer, but you can't fail by getting on the deer you can find and staying and just being on deer. I mean, because that's where the bucks are going to be now.
Yep.
You got to remember too; those bucks are looking for those does too. So just like
just how you're looking for them, they're looking.
It's the same. Hiding. It's the same thing. Like you, if you're after, that's what sucks about you're after certain deer, and then too, not only a lot of those times, I've seen those bucks will find those does and wait them out. Sometimes they won't push them. I've seen
just bed with them.
I've seen hunting in the middle of I don't even know how big a field's, 600 acre cut fields, whatever, just in a little corner tucked against the river, not moving. That doe is bedded down. Mm-hmm. He is not leaving her side until she's ready to breed. And it's just so
they're just locked
so now. This is just we're talking about just before the rut kicks in. Then there's the other lull that when the rut is on and does are in heat, they disappear also. That's when the lockup stage.
Yeah, yep.
So same thing. What do you do in that stage? You get down and you go look for where they're all with the big pie is happening.
Right.
So, and a lot of guys don't like to do that, and I love to
do
that. That's the old bump and dump during the rut.
Okay.
You can find a gold mine.
But at the same time, though, a lot of guys will start to focus on these pinches and these transitions, banking on –
right.
Those bucks looking the same way you are. So
let's try and do this. Again, I'm trying to come from a listener perspective. Mm-hmm. So it's November 1st right now, time of recording this. Would you say that right now the does aren't in hiding yet? They haven't necessarily had all the pressure to want to get away from the bucks yet. Do you think?
I think we're right at around that.
You getting there?
Our bucks, too, have disappeared. A lot of the does have disappeared and the bucks have moved on, so they're out searching too.
Okay.
So they're probably off the property,
Right. So right now is a good time to be out there because they're kind of frantically looking for does, checking different groups of does. Okay. So when from the
it all varies, though.
It all varies.
We had a doe come in last year, October 14th, and it took every single buck off our property.
Well,
I'm not shitting you because I was there.
It was at one ravine, and I was hunting it.
No, I seen it.
Well, no, that stuff definitely does happen. But I know none of this is like November 1st, it's this. November 2nd, they're doing this. There's a huge bleed over thing here.
Hunt the high populations of does right now, and all your bucks will be nosing around there. So,
if guys are going to the second week of November, and, this isn't definite. We're speaking roughly. Then they go into hiding, and then how long do you think from that time do you think that they end up being locked down? A week, second week of November.
Well, the
doe's
got to go in the heat, then the bucks will get on them, and then it's like 3 to 4 days before they can be bred.
Yeah,
and then you'll get a bunch of bucks. I think it's nature's way of getting the best buck to breed. So as the days go on and they go through the night, bigger bucks take over that doe. More bucks jump on the bandwagon and are all standing around waiting to see who can who can get it. Then once that happens. If that happens up in some ravine and your entire property's got all those bucks just hanging on that one doe that's in heat, you might not see anything for the whole entire property.
Right,
but you find that spot where they're all held up.
And then you're in the money.
And when you're scouting, here's what when you start walking up and having bucks standing around looking at you and not running off in like an area, let's say some.
They're kind of getting the zombie mode.
You are in, there's a doe in heat in there, there's bucks tending her, and they're not leaving. Set up your stand, man, and hang on to your hat.
That's a good tip. Because I think a lot of people see that situation sometimes and don't realize what actually is happening. Mm-hmm. I like that because that can really make the difference. Like, there's got to be a hot doe in here. He didn't just bust out of there.
Some people don't realize either that them does don't stop feeding. So if you get a doe in heat and it's going to take 4 days, you pattern that doe. If it's at the doe, you know where her patterns is. She's still going from bedding to feeding.
Yeah.
And the bucks are just tagging along and following. So there's another thing that you might want to.
That's a good tip. That's a good tip. I think people know to find the does, and you hear that a lot in podcasts and TV shows and stuff like that. But I think sometimes it gets lost in the oh, fuck, I got to get a deer down. I got to get a buck. And they are looking more for a buck and overlooking that they should be looking for a hot doe. Instead, you know what I mean?
Like, or just the volume of doe over there.
Yeah, sometimes, and I'm guilty of this, is in my head, I'm like, start kind of getting frantic and wanting to get on a buck so bad that I'll overlook sometimes what are obvious signs that it's kind of just telling me right there if I just slowed down a little bit and was like, there's a bunch of does. If I hunted does for the next 5 days, I'm probably going to have a pretty good chance of seeing a good buck in that time frame.
Yeah, I guess that magical time that whenever you see a doe, there's some bucks just not far behind, dogging along. So
for sure. So I'm really looking forward to the next couple weeks. I hunted last night. As I'm stepping into the stand, I look down and there's two bucks, 120, 125ers, but just scrapping.
Yeah.
And I get in there, and then a half hour later, I look back and there's a big wide eight bumping like five does around in circles. He never came close enough for a shot or anything, me, that's getting fun. Well, we just had snow. We should add that. There's a lot of people that might be listening or watching. We got a substantial amount of snow for Halloween. I got 3 inches probably where I'm at.
I love the hunting snow.
It went from, I think we ended up getting like 6 or 7 total. Now we had a melt in between.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We got about 3 or 4, and then it warmed up, and then the next night we got 3 or 4. But
well, I think that's why I saw the activity. It just was the right, and it was low temps. It was like 25 degrees last night, and that's not.
Well, I don't know what you did when we got that snow. I went and ran all over and seen where all those big tracks are coming
tracks
out.
Are
and I've got right back on them now. So.
See, that's awesome. That's the cool thing because it's rare when we have a snow like that heavy.
You're looking in the mud for that sign now. It's just as plain as day.
Yeah, it's right there. You can see it. And that was nice going into my stand last night. Like, I got off work and rushed out there as fast as I could. And I was going to set up in another stand, and there wasn't any tracks. Mm-hmm. Well, where I ended up going, you just started to see it just tore up.
Talk about your mobile unit now. You got a stand set for a certain time, but now we're following these does around.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you sat in a permanent stand yet this year. Every morning, every evening, he's on and just setting up.
Throwing it up.
I'm about half of that, going into an old stand, seeing what's going on, and then diving in and moving around. So
yep.
You got to get mobile, even on private land.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to stick with the deer and the sign of where it's all happening.
Right, yeah.
I think that's something that people overlook too, because it's funny you say that. I think I was talking, I don't know who I was talking to the other day. I was talking to Byron or something and about going in the morning. And I was talking about, like, oh, I was heading in with the stand. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go set a stand here. And like he's like,
you set up a stand in the morning.
Well, he's like,
in the
he's
dark?
Like, he's like, you guys got like 100 stands on that property. And I'm like, and then, if you look at, it's November. We've been hunting pretty hard. I think, I probably sat in a permanent a set that was up maybe 3 times now. That's it. But
it says a lot, though.
Well, this is the perfect year to have the portable because half our trees are down from windstorms.
It's just weird,
Something went through and killed all our underbrush, so our woods is all wide open.
It's like hunting a different farm
this year.
So
we are literally...
It's crazy.
All different spots are hot right now than normal.
Right. So, well, that's, I like to keep one ready to go in the truck. And that way if I have my preset stands, but, if you have one ready to rock, it's your tool.
Yep.
You need to get it out and get after it. That's what I plan on doing tomorrow. I'm going to hang and bang a set and go after it.
It sucks because one of those couple times where I was going to a set, to a stand that I knew was there, and I'm like, oh, this is a good spot. It's always a good spot. I'll be able to see. On my way there, I was looking and I was like, motherfucker, I should have brought that. I should have just went right here. And then I told myself, like, just at least bring it next time. And then the next 2 times, I just stashed it by the tree. If I gotten somewhere else, I tucked it.
Yeah.
I tucked it on
still
the side.
Bring
of the,
it with you.
Yeah, I tucked it on the side of the bank.
It's
carrying my gear for me.
If we can ever get a few more, we're going to leave them at strategic spots all over the farm, so you can just
check in, sign in. Yeah, we thought about
like
having
a little
sign-in sheet. You got the pen that's on a string through the tree.
So we have indentations that he's taken the bucket and removed that we can like park bikes and stuff, right? So for access. So, think of the same thing. Under a tarp is a fucking lone wolf setup. Like
just
you just
stashed.
You slide it right out.
Just in a wood treasure chest. Just moving dirt out of the way.
Yeah, and then, when you're done, just hang it right back
there.
And
I like where you're going.
Have about 15 of those.
Seems like just a little more work than just taking it with you every time. But it made for a great story. A lot of people have been messaging on the custom gear page and the working class page, sending photos of, I haven't set out a one pre-hung set all year, and normally there's a deer in the photo with the standard there, which is really
cool.
So,
a very good correlation, too, with last year in the field testing stage of this stand, I was hunting Illinois, and this is a good tactic they have for the rut, too, is just people are scared and they're hesitant to move. But so little story, went in the dark, set a stand up in the morning, did a hanging out in the morning with the new setup, the prototype.
Question, just one thing about for you going. Do you use a regular light or like a red light or
I don't use any lights.
Okay.
And you want to know why? Because I will be late for my funeral and I'm late for everything.
Sorry, late.
So it's the light. There's all I can always see. To tell you the
just
truth,
just braking type.
Yeah, and I don't like lights either. I think my eyes adjust well. Anyway, so I don't really use the light.
Just figured I'd ask.
Yeah, but going in, I set up, and I ended up, and this is the story of my life. I'm thinking to myself, you know, the sun comes up, and you know, I'm thinking like, oh, I'm in a pretty good spot, you know. And literally, as I'm thinking that, I turn my shoulder, and I got a tank coming through. Just I'm like, motherfucker. I'm like, yes, you know. So, and he ends up skirting on a doe and getting by me, and then I see him ping pong through the timber, and cut past this corner. And then as I'm watching him, in the next 20 minutes, I see him go past that corner twice. And not in the
go
not,
time.
Yeah, and exactly. I'm like, oh, shit. I mean, he's been literally going anywhere. And wherever the doe goes, and there's been no rhyme or reason, and he crossed that corner twice. So I'm like, fuck it. Got down, went to that corner immediately. Like, so to whereas I was seeing awesome action. This deer was 40 yards from me the entire time. But
yeah.
he was never getting into my grasp. So I moved down. Got over to the corner. 20 minutes later, I missed that fucker at 25 yards.
Oh, shit.
So, I mean, it's just one of those things that people are... A guy would go home and be like, I had the greatest hunt. Slammer was running everywhere. He was ping-pong, and it was awesome, and I can't wait to go back. If you would have been aggressive and moved or had the ability to move your setup,
yeah,
you might have killed that deer. Like, you know,
that's a great tip, and I think a lot of people don't... For a lot of guys, it doesn't cross their mind to... Let's go. I'm going to move over there right now. Like, you know what I mean? Where a lot of guys might think, like, hopefully it comes by.
So you talk about going in and actually scouting in the morning when you can see. But here's something we've found over decades of doing this, and some of the other friends I have that are pro staff that do the same thing. They'll go in the morning and set up a stand in an area they've really never been before. And you're not going to experience this unless you do it. And I don't know what it is, but in the morning at that low light, you see –
things you don't
I
see.
I think you see the forest like a deer sees it. All the fine brush and stuff is gone. Major corridors. And every time I go in and do that, man, I pick the right spot. And I can't believe it. I've done it already in the fog and southern Iowa.
It's weird. It's like you're getting on the same.
You're getting that view like they're getting in the morning when
you're
traveling through.
You're seeing it a different way. And then also you have a bunch of limiting factors too, like – you don't have the luxury to trim an entire section. You know, you have to get where you have to get. You know, you're seeing it just, I don't know.
It's almost like when tracking a deer with in a cloudy day instead of with the glare of the sun on it, how you can't really see what's going on. But on a cloudy day, you can. It's almost the same thing in the woods. So,
yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, the whole hang and hunt, run and gun style hunting is it's so effective. And it's something that I've always done. Me and my dad talked about it this morning. I was on my way to work. He was on his way to the stand, and we were talking about. I was telling him I was coming down to do this podcast. We're talking about like mobility. Well, when I was young, going way back, not to like beat that story to death. When I was young, and we got the Lone Wolves off you guys at the Illinois Trade Show back in the day. For me as a youngster, that was the way to get me mobile. Was a nice stand setup like that. But even then, it's like with these, you know, with this setup, with the DeQuisto Series 1.0, that is going to take me to the next level as mobility goes. And I'm hoping it allows me to have ingrained in my mindset, like what you just talked about. You know, if you see that buck go by that point twice and he's ping-ponging around, get down and get the fuck over there. Because, like you said, you can just be like, him-haw, shoulda, woulda, coulda, saw him. Yeah. You're just telling your wife about it when you could be showing her the buck. Yeah.
If you're not an all-day sitter, which I'm not, I can't sit all day. I'll actually have three different sets in one day. Like if I went out of town to hunt, I'll sit till maybe 9:30 or something. Slide back into the bedding area, hunt. Especially when it's really cold and you want to get up and loosen up. You do a little scouting on the way in, and you can just.
That's a really good tip. You know, I love that actually because that's something I also want to get into. And some questions that people wrote in is like all day sits, and I think a lot of guys look at an all day sit as being. One, it's kind of cool. Like, you're doing an all-day sit. You put online, I'm doing an all-day sit. Look how tough I am. This is awesome, which is fine. But I like to move, too. Like, I like to get down and then sit somewhere else. I'm hunting all day, but I might not be in that stand.
Well, at a certain time of day, that's a good spot. But midday, it's not. So you're kind of, you know, you're hoping – they're hoping for the rut where these things are just running all over hell and they're going to travel a lot of –
Right. Well, how many days a year, and maybe it's zero, but I just want to kind of make a point out of this. How many days a year do you think you sit in the same spot from sun up to sundown? Is it?
I've never done it.
I was going to say, for me, I bet there's not one. What I do now is I follow the moon phase, and if it's the peak is like in midday,
yeah,
I'll hunt, get back in, and I'll go back in from that 11 to 2 period.
Yeah.
I never been an all-day sitter. I'm a scouter. I poke around a lot. So
right, yeah, which, I mean, it's obviously proven deadly. Mm-hmm. And I think that right there is going to surprise a lot of viewers and listeners because – you know what I mean?
I think the
I did it.
Does it. You know what I mean?
I did it once when it, years ago back in the 80s, the big rave was to sit all day. Deer are moving midday, you know, and says, they probably are. So I sat from sun up till I think it was noon. The moon phase said that would be it. And yeah. I could have shot a Pope and Young at like noon. I says, well, it's going on here at noon. I said, but I'm never coming back and doing this again. fine to know that, you know. But
yeah, yeah. Well, it also is a mental. It keeps your mental strength going, too, because I like that fresh feeling when you slip into a spot and you get up in the tree and you just feel like a ninja. And it's kind of nice if you're going to be out all day. It's less taxing on your, like, mental, like, stamina of hunting if you can change it up. And if you didn't see anything all morning, it feels good to change it up midday.
So you talk about food plots in the morning, right? So you hunt the food plot edges, everything coming off the fields.
Mm-hmm.
You get that action. Now it all goes dead. Now you get down. You go bounce back into the bedding area. You set up a stand there, and you get a double
hunting
for the day.
And I think most of these guys who are pulling all-day sits are sitting in funnels or sitting, I mean, you know, something that's more of like a late-morning action.
Yeah.
And then good all through the, I don't know.
Canada on a bait pile or somewhere. They got to sit from, you know, sun up to sundown.
And that's the thing, too. If you're sitting on a bait pile, I mean, yeah, then.
Whatever,
at any point in time, I mean. You would almost think that those does and those deer would just be right outside that bait pile all held up, and you don't want to disturb that, and they're going to come back, you know, when they feel like getting up or browsing around.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, I can see if you had just the most perfect of pinch points that deer, whatever your situation would be, come in all day, then I can see sitting. It eats me alive. I get antsy and sort of impatient if I'm
going to. Does anybody do the half-hour rule? So when you're sitting on post, you're planning on getting down at 10. And you see a deer.
At a half hour.
And sometimes, in some days, you probably could stay the whole day because you're going to see them. I just get the hell down and get out of there, you know. So.
I don't know if I ever do that. It's more of like I've never applied that half hour rule exactly. For me, it's like, well, there's a deer. Okay, I'm excited again. Once that tapers off, then I'm like, all right,
I'm out of here.
Get the fuck down and go somewhere else.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I just want to cover that at least because with the – how chaotic the rut can be. Some guys choose to do all day sits, and it's probably works for a lot of people. But
right, and your all day sit is okay. Let's say the peak time is 2 to 1 or something today. The guy that sat the whole day, he's getting action. You're not. You left. You hunted a bad time in the morning, and you hunted a
bad time
in the evening. And the time to have been there would have been midday.
Mm-hmm.
But to get in, man,
it's very hard to
7 degrees, you know, in the morning, sit the whole freaking day.
You got to have good gear. And
it's also very hard to get into that. I think you get into a morning, evening approach and to completely abandon that and just, well, I think I'm just going to go sit 5 hours midday and then knock one.
Remember the one that I did that with here? Hugh, that buck right there. It's going to be midday. Mm-hmm. I'm sleeping in this morning and I'm getting up and I'm going out at night. That thing was every camera, every stand that I had on this property, that thing went by. If I'd have been out that day, I'd have killed him. And my wife seen him and run through the yard here, and I'm like, man, I missed the boat today. So you never know.
Well,
you know.
My buddy Ross Bigger, he's been on our podcast a lot, and he's a big buck killer. He's running the setups this year, and he's on them. I'm waiting for that text every day now from him. But
yeah, it's been a tough year, man.
For a lot of guys, there has been less deer down this year from my group of friends than ever before. I don't know if it's the crop is in late or what.
I'll show you some video.
I mean it's like you were saying before, probably the best and worst October in the same
I'd say it's a good
big hot shot hunters and
man.
Yeah,
you should see the caliber deer that got within 20 yards of his stand and didn't get killed this year. It's like what the hell's going on, you know?
So. Well, what I was gonna say is Ross, he likes to go in at like 10-11 and sit for a while, and I don't know if he'll sit there till dark or if he'll sit there for a few hours and move and then get down. But he's got a couple hunts on video, him getting in, you know, late morning and then shooting a buck within an hour. And
I'll be the first to admit it. When I get down most of the season, I know it's not the time to be getting down for them big deer.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I get down at 9:30, 10. Who the heck in their right mind at this time of year would get down in there? And those deer are moving. They let the does all go in bed, mm-hmm. and then they go shagging all day looking. So,
right.
You got to have the. I just don't have that the stamina or will to do that. So.
Yeah, yeah. I'm my plan tomorrow. I'm going to hunt in the morning, then I'm going to do a hang and bang set and see how it feels. It's going to be one of those. I'm throwing a hang and bang up for an afternoon set, but I think what I'm going to do, hang a stand. Then go grab another setup and go hang another stand on the other side, and then I'm going to probably hunt both of them, like you said, maybe a midday sit, eat lunch in the stand, yep. get down, and then go hunt the other spot.
Yep.
But we have some – for my property, we have really funky winds tomorrow. Straight west sucks for my area.
Oh, yeah.
So some people it's great, but west not good for me.
Man, you should have seen the monster I could have killed if I could have got out tonight. Boy, I had it all pinned down. The times are just
there.
Right.
It is. Well, what haven't we covered about there's, the rut? I'm feeling the guilt now. I'm like, oh, I better get the hell out
right.
of here.
We're
there's,
fine.
Yeah,
it's a little cut and dry because of how chaotic it can be. It's hard to give in stone advice because it just doesn't apply.
We could
there.
Talk about what. So all our October deer on this property had a lot of big ones this year. Working scrapes, got a lot of camera footage of them, seen a lot of them, and all of a sudden, they disappear, and guess what happened? A bunch of new, different bucks, smaller, lousier bucks, moved in because now the bruisers that are conquering this place,
yeah,
they're gone.
They moved out, yeah.
So now we're noticing a few are moving back, so once I converted over to hunting the bucks to the does,
mm-hmm.
I almost closed the deal on a monster the first time in and it
really?
Just but I didn't, so it's like you ever get your ass kicked in a football game or a track meet? Well,
that's what happened.
We're getting
huh?
kicked right now, but I'm
well
digging deep, brother.
You know that is going to make listeners and viewers feel good that the DeQuistos get their asses kicked from time to time.
Oh man.
And
there's a lot of time spent chasing, you know. I mean, it's
yeah
it's,
well, getting your ass kicked is what I mean. You never quit learning, right? So it's especially someone that's chasing their first big buck. That's good for you because you learn more that way.
So let's say we're not all that great of a hunter, but let's say we've captured the ability to get more opportunities than most guys. And, mm-hmm. you know, if I get 10 shots at some big deer, I think I get one of them out of that.
I hope so.
Where, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah, I mean, but that is, you know, if you can get yourself in the spot for some good opportunities,
that's
especially on
that's
some.
The whole game.
Yeah.
I always call it just all you do is capture one moment in time.
Yeah, because you can get in on that deer and he might just blaze right by you, and you were on him.
Yeah,
but he didn't stop. Like we talked about it on the way when I was on the drive down. Like, have a buck come in, he doesn't come out from whatever brush or shrub, whatever he's making a scrape or a rub on, and he stands there for 15 minutes, but never gives you a shot. Doesn't mean you failed. You did everything.
How about if he stands for 10 minutes, gives you a shot, and you don't realize it's the one you're after, and you let him walk?
Yeah,
that's a real good feeling. I'll show you some video too.
This year?
Yeah. So we'll show you some.
So hold on. It was the buck you were after. He came in. You didn't think it was the buck you were after until he walked
I thought
off.
It was just some other big 170 class frickin' cage, right? So
you were passing.
It's raining out. It's foggy out. I left my binocs in my pack because of the rain. I got a cover for my camera.
Yeah.
And this buck comes out and starts busting off branches as big as my forearm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's two bucks fighting back there. And I could see back in the leaves that it's just one. It looked like a big, heavy, typical 10, but low tying. So I'm using my camera as like the binoculars. You know how it goes out of focus?
The digital zoom. And
comes in. It's shaking off, doing this deal. Comes in about 10 yards, and all of a sudden I got my wind, and it bugged out. I looked it on the camera. No big deal. I showed it to him on a big. He put it on a laptop. He says, "Dude, this is the deer you're after." He showed me the time. I'm like, "You got to be shitting me!" I'm like, so it just blew the whole deal.
Oh man!
So that really hurts. That thing, when I get him down, I'm kicking him in the head.
That hurts me a little bit because I've.
That's the kind of shit that happens.
I've never had a 170 typical like within distance. I've killed some good bucks, but that's where I'm. That's what I'm striving for.
Yep.
So. Yeah, I can imagine.
Well, normally the guys see a rack of that, you're knocked up and you're going to kill them, you know. But,
yeah. My method is if I have a buck coming in, especially because it all depends on how they walk in, is kind of how mentally I react, you know. Because if they come in hot and you see it's a good deer, a lot of times it can go two ways. Sometimes I'm like, oh, good buck.
It's instinctual.
And then you shoot and he's dead right in front of you.
See, but it doesn't matter. You're not looking for specific deer.
Right. Like,
you don't want to make the mistake of shooting the wrong deer if you're looking for
right.
one.
So. That's true.
That's something to really dive into because it. The concept and the premise of hunting a deer versus just a good deer is, man, it is a world of a difference. Of
well, if it was just a good deer, we'd be done right now.
Well, that
does change a lot.
When you're looking for something, and then you get your mindset on something, and then it becomes about you're not just hunting deer, you're not just hunting a big deer. You are trying to hunt a specific like that. Yeah. That just takes the game to a completely new level, and it really makes.
Well, normally you're honing one animal down.
As soon as you spot it, normally you throw your binocs up, you identify it. Okay, that's him.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like you know, it's foggy out, it's raining out, and I'm so excited about this season, all these new products. I haven't hunted in the rain probably in 15 years. I've hunted in the rain now three times this year, and I'm loving all of this.
You were out last weekend in that downpour, weren't you?
Yep, and that's when I got my opportunity. So,
oh, really?
There's another point. I was out there. There was some other times, too, that was really lousy. Guys stayed in. I was out there, and I got video footage. I could have filled my tag. So,
I think a lot of guys
hunt as much as you can, you know.
Yeah, even rain. How do you guys notice that it was really windy a couple weeks ago, like really, really windy? Do you notice big deer move just the same in the wind? Do you feel they hunker down? I mean, just from personal experience.
One of the best days I've had in Wisconsin was the windiest day I've ever had. And I've had days when I haven't seen nothing, but my friends that are out hunting same day have. So it's all, you know, they're out there, they're living out there.
Yeah.
Sometimes they hunker down, but them big deer at this time of year, that buck come out, you could see him just shaking his coat off and all the rain just flying off him. He was just loving it, man. He's busting up stuff. He's ready to rock, man.
That's awesome.
November's coming and I'm ready.
Getting fresh, yeah. You know. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, I don't think the wind really I don't think it plays a big unless it's like hurricane winds and like you know, I mean, but
I'm not a huge fan
under normal
of it,
conditions it is. If you take the rut and everything out of it, that I think they did studies on that too, that they just seem to move a little less because you know, what they rely on.
Yeah, everything's kind of skewed off a little bit.
Just like a
bit.
Turkey in a rainy day when they're out, they just, you know, they can't keep their guard up. So
Yeah. My thought would be if I try to put myself in, like, the deer's position is if I was worried about everything trying to kill me all the time, which technically that's what deer are always worried about.
Then I wouldn't be sitting still in the wind.
Well, my
would
thing
you?
Would be my paranoia
you
because
can't
everything's
hear shit.
Moving.
I'd be out in the open.
Yeah, see, out in the open or, I don't know, because everything in the timber is moving. So if I was a deer and I was paranoid about something getting me, I would be like, I'm going to get out of here and go. I would either go somewhere low.
Not there was that guy in a tree stand just standing still. Now you really stand out, right?
Yeah. You got to kind of like work yourself with the wind. You're like one of those guys outside of the car dealership.
Yeah, there you go.
Blow-up guys. That's what you got to do.
It's a good tactic.
It's a tip right there. It's a hot tip.
But people, I don't know. with them deer and them storms and that, I've seen some. I never would have used to miss a day. Rain, tornadoes, storms, I don't care what it was. I would just be out every day hunting when I could.
I was in that rain last weekend, and I was soaked to the bone. It was brutal. I was like, damn it, man. But you just feel like a buck's going to move through in it, just that nasty, cold rain. And plus, you feel like you're really going after it. You feel like you're, like, earning it, you know? It has that little grit.
Here's a quick story. So I'm on a buck. He's coming through these open harvests up in upper Wisconsin, some public land.
Mm-hmm.
And I got some access to some private land, and I was not, this thing was coming through every day somewhere, so I'm going to hunt. And this was literally a tornado. So I'm up in a tree, and this was a climber country back then.
Yeah.
When I watched the top get ripped off the mobile home of the people that gave me permission, I got down and got the hell out of there. Storm cleared up. I went back out. If I'd have been in that stand right after that storm, that buck was up and down every frickin' logging road because I got all wiped out looking for fresh sign, looking when he lost all the does.
Yeah.
Man, wow. if I just had the balls of hanging out, I probably would have killed him.
I don't know if that would be worth dying.
I cowered it out, man. I just got down and went back.
Oh, so, man. I think that's a fair excuse to get down during
a
tornado. That can get pretty hairy.
Pretty intense.
I don't know, man. I consider myself a pretty go-getter, but I hate the rain.
Don't get me wrong, man. I do not like hunting in the rain.
And, I mean, a lot of times I'd rather use that instead of suffering in the stand and for that little chance or then getting a bad hit on them or something.
Yeah, you lose a lot of deer.
I like to use that time to just go get other intel. I mean, like, if you park in glass an area in the truck and you ain't getting your gear wet, you ain't getting your camera wet, you can get a lot of freaking intel.
Still figuring something out.
Yeah. You're still, like, making
moves.
You're
still actively out there, yeah.
You know, so, I mean...
So don't go to a restaurant and have some bacon and eggs.
Yeah, yeah.
Get a vehicle, do some
glass. Eat a PB&J in your truck.
Yeah. Get some done.
Or, I mean, I don't mind getting wet if I just got one pair of clothes on. But, like, shit, I mean, we all know, too. Let's say you're down somewhere for the weekend, you're out, and you just get your all your gear soaked, and it just it's a
yeah, it changes things for you. You got to get things dried out.
But go scouting in the rain is awesome, too.
You know, that might be the day that you needed to be there.
Yeah, it's all
it can be any day.
A shoulda, woulda, coulda type thing when you get out of there.
Put in your favor by being a...
And this might be a loaded question, but I'm going to ask this since we're talking about weather and all this. Okay, I was expecting an attack.
We're done.
All right. out of all the deer you've killed, big deer you've killed, is there a weather pattern that's consistent? Like, was it a clear sunny day? Was it a cloudy day? Was it a rainy day? Because I feel a lot of deer I've killed, not all, but I'd say a high percentage are on really cold, clear days.
High pressure, yeah.
I mean, yeah, you can't.
It's when they move the best. And
yeah, you can't argue with a high pressure, clear, cold, crisp day for sure. Mm-hmm.
We talked about that October, that nasty, humid stuff this year. It was just it was just horrible, uncomfortable to hunt on.
I just didn't know if.
I'm trying.
You've
now
had
that
the
you
same s- setup. Or
now
not.
That you say that, I mean it.
Yeah, it's hard to. You'd have to take notes back then. All those years.
Yeah, it's hard to. It's hard to pinpoint. But
I always go back and look at like my photos with the buck. You know, like just
And I do. Now that you say that, you know, I mean, and I was thinking about this when we were talking the other. But I've had some pretty consistent luck on not extremely windy days, but a good solid 12 to 14 miles an hour, probably like.
Do you think it's because calm. That wind is consistent?
I think it's just
because
it's perfect for me. Yeah.
Oh,
I
like you're comfortable.
I get in the right spot, and it's there's no wind dies down, and some doe catches my scent. And
so I've noticed a little thing on that. So, and I don't know if it's right, but deer got an insulated body and stuff. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't you think when they're drenched and they're wet after like a storm comes through and a cold front comes through, wouldn't you think it's the same thing as hunting a deer when the temperature is 15 degrees below the normals that it is? Now that deer for that day is basically in that same realm, I would think.
I see what you're saying.
Well,
that would be
so
kind of what
they're more active. It's like it's a cold snap for them.
Well, maybe are they though? I mean, how are
their hides? I don't know if it got answered. I attempted to bring up on the October hunting podcast, like after a storm. Mm-hmm. You said you had to hunt after the storm. So maybe that's
better than.
But that's not. I think that's different though. You're talking about like
This is some way out stuff. I'm thinking.
I'm trying to grasp it. I think you're getting a little crazy with that.
All right. So right now,
I think
what
I
is it?
I think
it's 70 degrees in here, right? 70 degrees in here right now.
We don't have.
You're comfortable. If I take a bucket of water on you right now,
I'm going to get cold.
You're going to think it's like 40 degrees in here.
And I'm
going to
want to move around.
But right. So, I don't know.
I'm following you.
Yeah.
I like it. I don't know.
I get the concept.
I see those hides. All that hair is separated, man, right down to that hide, and it's cold out there.
I see what you're saying.
All right.
I don't know if they...
I don't think so.
See the activity, though.
Or it could just be it's 70 degrees out and they're wet.
Or no, he's not talking 70. He's talking after rain.
Right.
I think I know. I think these deer are just hunkered up, you know, or if they weren't moving or they're moving, it wouldn't really matter. I mean,
it probably doesn't matter to the deer. They just dive in the water like
they don't care.
Mark Spitz, you know.
I like where you're going though. I appreciated the thought. It was deep. Cody's a hater.
I award you no points.
it's one of those.
Yeah, the weather.
It's a big segment of activity you guys just missing out on then. So.
Yeah, no shit. It's like, think I'm dumb. Fine.
Yeah. Right.
It's like,
little do you know.
Well, I feel like we covered a lot. Do you think or no? I feel like you want us to cover something.
From,
we got
your
yeah.
I got my phone rocking on this. I can't pull it up.
We got some. I think we covered some good stuff.
I feel like you got something you want to bring up that's bugging you.
Me?
We just wasted a day.
Not a day.
This was one cast that we missed for that muskie that could have been the one that would have hooked him and put him in the boat.
Content is king.
Yeah. So I hope
you guys are
putting
it out there, brother.
Appreciative of this.
It's my fault.
Don't think like that? That this could have been the only opportunity.
Fuck yeah, I do think about it. Yeah,
okay, man.
It's bugging
me. I'm like that all the time. So.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, but.
Well, we talked about
Kurt has priorities. And
yeah, you can ask my wife. Christmas Eve.
I care about this company, you know.
New Year's Eve.
Yeah. You know, it's just whatever. It's fine.
Yeah.
Bar mitzvahs or or communions. I'm in a tree because.
Bar mitzvahs.
Well, whatever. If you're
barbecues.
Yeah, no, I can. I mean, yeah, you were gone quite a bit. I can attest to that. And there is a. Dude, there's a sick feeling, and I always wondered if anybody else got that, but
it's an inner guilt.
Well,
me.
I,
you know?
I mean, I'm just...
Like, fuck, I'm missing out. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah. I mean, but like you said, just that thought of, oh, shit, this could have been the one, you know, it could have been the one time I should have been out there. I should have... And I think that you should have your ass out there every chance you can get. Right. But... Mm-hmm. You know,
I would have never been out there in the rain if it wasn't for what we were doing, though. I'd have never been out there because I just stopped, you know. But now I'm back to, you know, wanting to.
Well, this also goes into my point I've made on a lot of other podcasts. The deeper you get into working in the outdoor industry, sometimes the sacrifices, it sucks some of your hunting time out, ironically enough.
No, it's ridiculous.
Never did for me, but except today.
You had things balance out pretty damn good then, apparently.
I got my priorities.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's...
Well, okay, so I'm sitting here right now, and I'm thinking, I got a line on the big guy again. He's checking a scrape. It was way after dark. Mm-hmm. Then it was an hour earlier.
See, I don't know this.
Last night it was 6:30.
Because we don't...
Mm-hmm. And I pattern these deers. It gets closer to rut. They'll be bedded up, and they move, and it seems like if you're in on them, they start moving a little early every day, and pretty soon they're up on their feet, and they're on their feet forever just moving.
Right.
Right now, if I could have been in that stand at like 5:30.
It's not 5:30 yet.
I'm just saying. I got to get out there. I got to take the trim saw.
He's closing this podcast out.
See, this
I'm just saying, man, this could have been the one, you know. And you know what? I'm going to have a camera to prove it. So if he goes through there at 5:30 today, I'm coming for you.
And then what we'll do is we'll lay that on the next episode, and then I'll just have to tell the listeners, like, sorry, Andre didn't want to do any more podcasts for you guys. So.
He gave it up.
Well, we could have been here after dark, right?
Going forward, the Christo Series podcast will be
I went into
Christo
work
short.
Early today outside and got of off
hunting,
early today.
Outside of hunting hours is the only time we do this.
See, that's the thing. I don't know about this. I don't get the information. He keeps all that fucking hush-hush.
That one you need to know about.
So there's like a competition? An internal, like, unsaid competition?
Oh, not really. It's just that's the intel I got in a buck I'm hunting. He's got his intel, and a buck he's hunting, you know.
I think there may be some – I think people kind of look from the outside and think, like, we're some, like, I guess, team, like, hunting this property. It's definitely not like that.
It's not that?
No.
Do you guys hug and stuff when you guys kill a buck? Is that what happens? There's no, like, warm father-son moment that happens?
I actually rigged an invention up on a bike now. He doesn't even have to call me to take his deer out. He could just rig it up manually and crank it onto the...
it's like, don't call me. I'm watching.
Because he kills a lot more deer than I do, so I'm doing most of the work, you know? So,
So one of us hopefully will kill a deer in the coming weeks, and then we'll try to do a podcast with the buck dead.
And if we don't... We are going to have a ball chasing these babies around. So,
and we're
still a ton of season left.
Yeah.
And we're going to get some, you know, on a further episode too. We have a lot. We got a lot of awesome footage this October of some big deer at very close ranges, and I think it'll really help us, like, for the next or one of the upcoming video podcasts. We'll lay a lot of that footage in it.
Yeah,
and we'll kind of talk about what happened, and we'll break down some specific situations because, like Dad said, it's. You can have, I mean, it comes down to that. You can have all your ducks in a row. You can be hitting it as hard as you can. You can be in the right spot. And these sucks.
Still bull hunting, man.
Yeah. I mean, there are no guarantees. I mean, these things are elusive, you know. So
that's why it's fun. If it was easy, we wouldn't be sitting here talking about it.
That's what keeps you after it. So.
Yeah. Yeah, with the podcast, we have a ton planned. It's a time thing now, but things are going to open up as time goes on, especially coming into the new year. And we have a ton of ideas. We're going to do... I mean, some of your guys' buck profiles and some of the deer you guys have killed, guests are going to hop on. This is going to just branch out into so many different avenues with this show. And, I mean, this is episode 4. We're just getting things rolling. Mm-hmm. And they're going to become more elaborate with information and video and photos and all that as we go. But we're getting them out, and then we're going back hunting right now. So they're pretty bare bones, but it's effective.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, but I think we covered some good stuff. And feel free to submit any questions for the future to our social media pages.
You can hit Working Class Bow Hunter, Lone Wolf Custom Gear on all social pages. Submit a question there. If you're watching on YouTube, subscribe and like and leave a comment if you want. You can say that you hate me or you want Cody to maybe do something different with his facial hair for the next podcast. or, you know, whatever. Talk about deer hunting.
Shave it all off, Glenn.
Dude.
Don't forget to mention about the products in stock now.
Kurt gives me a lot of stuff, a lot of crap. What did you say last time? I sent you all those buck pictures, and you were like, dude, you look like a different human being every time.
Well,
I just pulled out the power stash, and one's going down because when that comes, you got to keep the face guessing, man.
I love that.
And you got to keep the deer guessing.
Dude, right? They never remember you if you always look different.
Exactly. Exactly.
Pro tip.
Yeah.
A lot of hot tips in this one.
Pro tip.
Keep the face guessing.
So my bench also went up 20 pounds when I did this too. Oh. So just saying.
Maybe I should do that. I could drink like three times as many Busch Lights or something. That'd be like my only power I would get out of it. Sweet. This is effective.
All right, man. All right, that's a wrap. Yep.
That's what a silhouette gets put in.
Ambush in stock. Wind
tree
bottles.
Stands in stock, and we got sticks coming next week. Everything now, we're finally starting to get caught up. I apologize for the rough year we had with the demand for this line was just unbelievable, and we're doing our best. So
it's getting smoothed out.
Yep.
That it?
Yeah, go work for it.
Hunt like a wolf, brother.
Go shoot your bow.
And you got to start howling.
That's my...